welcome to the Finder of Lost Things, exploring your superpowers of trust, healing, and transformation with me, Hannah Belton. My brother, Christian, disappeared in Mali, Africa in 2003. He disappeared without a trace. We lost his story. We didn't have closure. We lost so much. I was fighting and searching to find Christian when actually I just needed to sit in stillness and attract him in. I was so resistant to doing this, but I had to surrender. It's a process of trusting and finding the lost pieces and integrating them. This podcast will uncover the process that Christian and I went on to find the lost things, him, and to find the parts of me that were missing.
And we were destined from the start to tell our story into the dark, for we were born to a great white shark.
Hello, it's Monday again. It's time for another Finder of Lost Things with me, Hannah Belton. Hello, welcome, come in. I was going to say I've got a fire again so that I can tell my stories around the fire, but it's actually we're coming into spring and it doesn't feel like we need so much of a fire quite yet, but do come in because I've got lots of stories to share today. It's going to be another jam-packed show. A lot of it's kind of been downloaded to me just this morning, so because of events that I'm going to talk about, so bear with me. Hopefully it'll all run smoothly. But first of all, I just want to catch up with Steve Homewood, who we met on, well, I told you the story about him last episode. Remember, he was the naturalist that I went walking with, who told me about his grandfather being lost in the jungle, in the Congolese jungle. Well, I talked to Steve during the week, and because we're talking about love this week, we're talking about the power of love, and also we're going to be talking about the power of the spoken word. Okay, so Steve told me this absolutely amazing story that I'd just really love to share with you because it's a real love story. So I'm not going to say too much, actually. All I have to say is that really, yeah, we're talking about love, we're talking about power, and we're talking about meaning. So this is an email from Steve, and it just sort of tells a beautiful love story, which I want to share with you. So, yes, love. True love is a powerful thing, he writes to me. My wife and I met via an accidental like on a nature post I put on Instagram. I was here in Lewes, which is in East Sussex, southeast of England, and she was in her native Venezuela. I clicked on her profile picture and it was like being struck by lightning. Her face was like a missing piece of the puzzle that my life was. Even though we didn't look alike and she was 25 years younger than me, I felt as if we had always known each other, perhaps long ago in another time. She felt the same and we chatted every day, all day, for 2 years, during which we discovered that our paths had crossed several times in England before we'd met on the internet. She'd been to England before to learn English and lodged with a friend of mine. And she visited a dental surgery a few years later in Brighton, and I worked there. But I was upstairs in a different department, and again, we missed making contact. It was as if the fairies were playing tricks on us. Since then, many other peculiar things have led us to believe there was a power at work that we have little knowledge of, and perhaps there is a kind of reincarnation in the universe, and indeed we had met and been in love before. We finally married in Venezuela, but I could only stay there for a week. A year later, after thousands more phone calls and video links, she arrived in England, and 2 more years later on, we're still very much in love that first day, as that first day, and living together in Lewes. So I had actually asked Steve at some point, had he made an intention to meet his soulmate? And he said, yes, he had in 2016. So this must have been about a year before I met him. he'd actually read a book called The Secret. And it was all about the positive, you know, bringing in things that you were wishing for. There was a particular way of doing it. And he said he'd just read this book. And then suddenly there was this mysterious accidental like on his Instagram. So I'll leave you to decide about that. But anyway, then also he mentioned, also he said, last week I read a scientific journal and was reminded of Einstein's and Newton's and Hawking's work and the theory of relativity, in which I was reminded that nothing can be added or taken away from the universe. What there is in our universe is all there is. One may die and one may be born, but what you are never goes. It just changes. A matchstick was once a tree. It is now dead, but that latent energy, when burnt, it changes to heat and light. Its ashes make plants grow, and it grows again, but maybe into a different plant. A star exploding in the cosmos does the same. Its components simply reform into other stars and give light and life again. Yes, maybe we all eventually, by luck or by magic, meet our true loves and lost ones again. So thank you to Steve and to Maria. I'm sure you can see their pictures up there. If you want to know more about Steve, his website is stevehomewood.com, and he's an absolutely beautiful man and has now have beautiful wife, Maria. So that was just a nice little story to tell you for Valentine's Day. And actually, even thinking about there's several things in there that I can see are totally sort of Christian and I, our story, which is essentially a sibling love story. You know, we had the intention was always there to find him. And I set out my intention to the universe, as we talked about last week. And this idea that, you know, we're destined to meet our soulmates eventually. And we have to keep, and I actually asked Steve if he had any advice about meeting, you know, looking out for the soulmate or the one who you're going to be with. And he just said it's like looking out in when you're looking at nature. So it's really looking, really listening and making eye contact with people and really noticing if there's anything that's between you. So I think that's beautiful advice. Beautiful advice. So we're just talking about spoken intentions, and I'm just going to tell you about the importance of speaking intentions rather than just thinking about them or writing them down. The act of speaking is such a powerful thing, and it carries a vibration. Like, everything you say creates your reality. And I just want to take you back to 2015. So I had decided that I wanted to hold a 40th birthday party for Christian. Obviously, he wasn't there, and at that point he'd been missing for 12 years, but I felt a very strong pull to mark his life in some way. I'd been a writer in residence for a funeral company for a year, and I kept getting this idea that I had to do something to mark his life somehow. And yeah, my parents were a bit shocked when I said that's what I wanted to do, but I managed to persuade them. And I spoke I didn't want to call it a eulogy because I didn't feel it was a eulogy, but I made a speech about things that I had found leading up to Christian's party. And I just want to share a little bit about, yeah, the intention that I made, the spoken intention that I made to find him. So there was the first thing that I'd found before the party was Christian had painted a mural of, the name has just gone out of my head. Reggae star. Oh my God. Christian, where are you? It's good. Totally gone. Anyway, this painting had actually been sold with the house that, so mum and dad had moved house, and the son of the people who'd bought the house had liked this image that Christian had had on his wall up above his bed. And my parents, or our parents, actually left the painting with them when they moved. So I was looking for this painting, wondering and wanting to have it at the party. And I sort of said to Mum and Dad, where is it? And they told me the story about it being left behind with the new owners of the house. And I thought, I wonder if they've still got it. It's a long, long, very long chance that they have it. But I wrote to them, my email, I wrote a letter to them. And the father wrote back and said that they still had this painting. They still had it. And so I went along to collect it. So I met this man, and he was so relieved that they hadn't thrown out the picture or burnt it or something. So we had this, like, it was pretty impossible, but 12 years later we had this painting back from that Christian had painted. And the other thing that I'd found just before the party was there was a Mungo, I don't know if I've got it here even. Oh yeah, I do. It was this book that Christian, that's how he found Mungo Park, who he followed in the footsteps of Mungo Park on his trip to Africa. And I couldn't find this book anywhere. And I was desperate to find it because it's full of notations that Christian wrote. And I was looking for it on all my bookshelves. And I had in my head that it was this blue cover and, you know, blue spine to look for. And I couldn't find it. Anyway, eventually I found it. And as you'll see, it has a red spine. And, like, it was there all along. Anyway, so I'll just read you a little bit of the speech that I made. So one thing we found after 12 years, something we didn't think was possible, which was the painting. Another thing found which had eluded us all, even though we'd searched high and low, which was the book. And of course, you can guess what I hope will be the third lost thing we find. And obviously, that was going to be Christian. But, and I say, before I go any further, I'd like to explain what I'd like everyone to do after we've toasted Christian. When I was making the playlist for the party, I went through all of his cassettes to find his favourite artists and songs. While listening in the car to the mix I'd made on a long journey to the National Funeral Exhibition, yeah, a long story, I'd had a vision of us all here holding hands in a circle while Lenny Kravitz's Let Love Rule was playing. I remember Christian playing it over and over again while he tried to get the notes and rhythm on his bass guitar. It seemed the only music to play. So it feels right to ask you in a minute to join together and send positive thoughts to Chris and get him to come home. For whatever reason, we still think he's out there on his way home, just not with any urgency. He probably doesn't even realise the grief he's been causing. And then I just sort of made a toast to Christian, my brother, and then all the nicknames that everyone knew him there as, and we miss you so much, and please come home soon. So that was the speech that I made. That was my first spoken intention to find Christian. And as I said, we'd found the picture and the book, and the next thing to find was Christian. So really the intentions are so important. And that sending that power of love out from you. I have to dedicate this show to a gentleman who I met a few times and only probably spoke to him once or twice. His name is Peter Lawrence, and that's why the show's a bit all over the place today. But he died this morning. I think he died this morning. And he was part of the Missing People choir that I belonged to. He'd lost his daughter, Claudia, in 2009. She'd gone missing in York in England. It was all over the papers, and I have a very special place in my heart for Peter, because he fought to get an act passed, and it was actually passed in July 2019, I believe, where after 90 days of a person being missing, the families can actually legally deal with that person's affairs. And, you know, if you have a person who goes missing, one of the worst things is that you literally can't do anything with their finances, with their like any of their affairs. It's just, and you know, when we were, when Christian was missing, we actually had to, or mum and dad actually had to apply to the court to have him certified as dead before we could do anything with his affairs. And it was such a long, heartbreaking process. So Peter fought for that, and he was a very gentle and very inner strength, but he fought for that to come into law. So that's Claudia's law. Yeah, so I need to really talk about the missing people connection. So last week we were talking about how I got out of my sort of dark night of the soul and actually started to write things for missing people. That actually led to Christian being featured on Britain's Got Talent in 2017. The Missing People Choir got through to the semi-finals of that competition, and Christian was featured on the back wall behind the choir. And that was the first time that I'd really had the emotional impact from seeing Christian as a missing person, because at that point I had got my hope back. That, and I think Christian and I had probably made contact at that point, so we were thinking we were telepathically speaking to each other at that point. But looking at watching Christian come up on the missing people or behind the choir, I was in floods of tears, and I could feel the emotion coming out of the television at me, and I could feel the emotion of everybody in the audience and everybody watching the program. And the thing is that it hit me so hard, because the one regret that I'd really had, and the saddest thing for me about losing Christian at that point, was, it's, I think Livia's going to be able to put it up on screen, it was an email that I actually wrote to Christian on the 6th of February before he went. It was like just before he went off to Africa. And I'll read it to you. It says, "Dear Chris, just so that I'm on your records, I'm sending this to you with love. I hope that you really enjoy your time away and get everything you want out of your trip. You'll be a star one day. Not that you aren't already in my eyes. And I'm very proud of you for your perseverance and determination in following your dream. I will miss you loads and think of you every day making your way in Mungo's steps. And beware of the Moors." The Moors were, they imprisoned Mungo on his trip. So I was like, "Beware of the Moors, be nice and polite to everyone, and don't go taking stupid risks. I'm sure that Mungo will look after you anyway. Please write with progress reports so I can follow you on the map and know that you're all right. After all, you are my little brother. Take care, and I love you very much. Han, XXX." Now, the thing that's so sad about this is that Christian never opened that email. And that fact in my head that he hadn't actually opened that email, I mean, we'd said goodbye to each other, but that he hadn't read that before he went, that was something which got me so hard. And then watching Christian as a missing person, because I don't think it really hit till I'd seen him on the screen. Yeah, that was a big moment, and like feeling all that angst and emotion around having a missing person, and you know, everybody else, society and the culture around having a missing person. It's like that nobody wants to think about it. It's just the worst thing that could happen in, you know, if it's a family member. But anyway, I then went on, sort of kept my relationship going with missing people, and went on to write a letter to Christian at the 2017 Missing People Christmas concert, which was in London. up at St. Martin's in the Field. Beautiful, beautiful church up there. And I was asked to go and speak. And I just said, yes. And at the time I thought, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. But I sat in that, in my seat. I took, my mum and dad came up with me and I sat in that seat. And I already tried to do a talk through just to test the microphones. And I couldn't get further than the first sentence without bursting into tears. And I thought, how on earth am I ever going to be able to do this? And I'll just read you, actually before the concert, I'd actually been asked by the Daily Telegraph. It was the missing people was part of their Christmas appeal. So I actually did an interview with the newspaper. And the last question, and it was, I think the headline was, have faith that she will find her brother. So at that point, I really was believing that I was going to find Christian. I had absolute faith in it. But the last section, literally the last bit of that article, I was asked, you know, am I fearful of all the complications that, like, if he suddenly turns up, which is what I was saying in the article, like, are you aware of all the complications that that will bring with it? And I said, after 14 years, he's going to have changed so much, but he's still my brother. I love him. It's what I want. And the whole way through that article, I was still fighting with this, what society and what the culture around having a missing person and the kind of like impossibility of finding a missing person after 14 years. I mean, it was so strong and I was fighting against it the whole time during the interview. And it was all of this fear and all this, you know, even if you find him, he's going to have changed so much. And how can you possibly work through that? And you know, it's how that's just going to be another level of stuff to deal with. But I was like adamant that, no, this is my brother and I love him. It was like, I think I'd got to the point where there was this just complete unconditional love for Christian, for whatever he'd put us through, and this expedition that it was his destiny to do it. We couldn't stop him. And, you know, I think is he gonna talk now? Yeah, I mean, we know this story. We've talked about it so often. Like, it was a wild goose chase after him. We'd got to the point where Christian and I had worked out all our anger and, you know, there was a lot of mistrust between us in him actually coming forward. And we'd worked out so much between us that there was absolutely no doubt in either of our minds that it was okay for him to come home and that it would all be fine. I would look after him. I would be the big sister. I would be the one that would be in between him and the media. You know, there was, we discussed all of that. There was absolutely no chance that I didn't want him to come home. I was fully ready and he was ready to come home. But yeah, so this little bit of the letter that I actually read out in the concert, I think Olivia's actually probably got a picture of me standing there. Oh gosh, I've lost it. What did I say? Oh yeah, here's the letter to him. I'm just going to read a little short extract. So this was directly speaking to Christian. I realise now that you may need me to reassure you, to become a lighthouse. Well, I can safely tell you that I have lit that beacon of unconditional love in my heart and I just leave it there, sending out my love to you. So this was me speaking the second time, I guess, that I'd publicly spoken about Christian. And whereas the first time I was like full of hope and I was like, we are going to find you. You know, I've found all these other things. We are going to find you. At this point, I'd done all the searching. I'd done my dark night of the soul. I'd really hit rock bottom. And now it had got to the point where we were just like, I couldn't attach to him being found. It really had to be like, I have unconditional love in my heart. Just come towards me. It was so powerful, that draw, that energy, that vibration. I'd gone from being in fear and grief and hope, essentially, to this strong beacon of unconditional love. And it was free to flow between us. You know, I wasn't trying to grab hold of him and keep hold of him tightly. That love was really, really flowing. It was a completely different experience speaking that letter. And actually, when I sat down, I literally shook. And I shook for about 5 minutes. I was sitting in my seat just shaking. And it was, I was letting out all my, like, I was going to say nervous energy, but it wasn't. It was like I'd spoken a real truth, and it was of such a powerful truth. And the love was palpable. I could feel it. And I knew the minute that I sat down that something big was going to happen. It was like, I know this is going to happen. I know he's going to come home. I know he's going to be, we're going to be reconnected. There's a little bit more to the story before we were actually reconnected. And this is a little bit more about Peter. I joined the Missing People Choir. It wasn't necessarily my choice. I had no intention to do it, but I did with another lady. And the last time I actually saw Peter was during the last rehearsal I did. And we actually rehearsed a song called I, Claudia, which a songwriter had actually written a song and the lyrics for Peter, this song, I, Claudia. And I found it, I have to be honest, I found this wasn't the first rehearsal. This was, we'd done a piece for Songs of Praise, which is on BBC One. It's a religious affairs program, and we'd actually sung one of our songs, and I had begun to feel really uneasy about the songs that we were singing, like I've been talking about, like the strength of the love and the positivity that I'd been speaking about and had been expressing. But the songs that we were singing were very heavy songs. They were obviously grief, sadness, I'm missing you. Like if I'd done a word cloud of all the words that we were using in these songs, they were heavy, heavy words like lost and fighting, survival, I miss you, empty, silent, I just want you near my side, searching. Yeah, so they were very heavy words. And I felt uneasy in that environment because I was feeling that if I was wanting to attract a missing person or I was wanting to attract someone to me, I would have to be more positive. But the love would have to be higher and more greater than the fear and the missing them, like to attract them in. And we've seen from Steve's story and the little bit extra that I've got to tell you, it is really about attracting, having a high vibration, having being strong yourself, and then attracting what you need and want to you. So even by that time, that last rehearsal, actually Christian and I had always been talking to each other telepathically, what we thought was telepathically, but literally a few weeks before doing the Songs of Praise recording, Christian had energetically come to me, and he'd actually moved into my body so I could feel him in my body. And this was the last sort of bit where we really connected, because he felt safe enough to energetically come into my space, and he was in my body, in my space. I was holding him for literally 2 or 3 days, and I felt so calm. It was like when I remember when I was pregnant, like that feeling of calmness and fullness, you know, and that's what it felt like, having him there with me. And that was the last thing that we kind of needed to do, that real bond and that real trust between us energetically. Yeah, so then going into that environment where I'm feeling the fear, other people's fear, and that the feelings that I'd felt around watching Christian on Britain's Got Talent, I knew I couldn't be in that space anymore. And yeah, I decided to leave the choir at that point. And then I'd made that decision, and this is so important, like making that decision to remove myself from a situation where I didn't feel comfortable anymore, it opened up another space for me. So this is a really important point, actually. Like, it's okay to release things and to let things go if they no longer feel comfortable to you. And actually, it was almost a few days later, I went on holiday, and I was walking along a coastal path, actually in Cornwall. And one of my guides, I was like literally, what was I doing? I wasn't meditating, but I was just clearing my mind and having, it was a very early in the morning, and I'd just taken Duffy out, our dog, and it was very cold, but I was walking along the coastal path, and I heard, "You are the finder of lost things. It is a great responsibility." And I'd heard other phrases and things before that I didn't understand, but I thought, oh, okay, that sounds quite serious. I was like, oh, I don't really know what to think about that. And I tried to sort of ignore it, really, to be honest. And especially because it was like such a big responsibility, I was kind of tried to ignore it, really. But then on the 1st of May, 2018, I was ready to be the finder of lost things. So it was like 2 weeks later, I and Christian found out that he was dead, and I had become the finder of lost things, sorry. And when we found out, I'm not going to discuss it here because we've talked about it many times before, but it was almost like, thank goodness we know. Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was a relief. Christian said it's like it was such a relief to know that he was dead. And like he'd been feeling very odd and nothing had really made sense to him. Obviously, in spirit, time and space is non-existent in terms of what we think of as times and things. So he hadn't been in any pain or anything like that. He was just like, and didn't realize how long it had been. But there was definitely this feeling of relief from all of us. Well, from Christian and myself, definitely. Then, so yeah, this finder of lost things kept coming back to me, and I kept being told I was the finder of lost things. So I understood it in terms of Christian. But then 3 weeks after I'd found out about Christian, Harry and Meghan Markle got married. And I was watching the ceremony. And this, I'm sure anybody who saw it, I'm sure you will remember the sermon that was delivered by the Most Reverend Michael Curry. He was talking about the power of love, and he was so enthusiastic and so, like, he was like an orator. I was hooked by him. But there's just a few. I've got the article here about it, and I just want to read a few little bits about it. So he says, there's power in love. There's power in love to help and heal when nothing else can. There's power in love to lift up and liberate when nothing else will. There's power in love to show us the way to live. And then he says, there's a healing balm. It's something that can make things right. And it is. There's a balm to make the wounded whole. That's what love is. Love is not selfish and self-centered. Love can be sacrificial, and in doing so becomes redemptive. And that way of unselfish, sacrificial, redemptive love changes lives, and it can change this world. And then he ends that. This is important. He ends with making this. He was talking about fire, and fire being one of the greatest scientific and technological discoveries in all of human history. And he was saying, like, if humanity ever harnessed the energy of fire again, if humanity ever captures the energy of love, it will be the second time in history that we have discovered fire. Okay, so he there was talking about this. I've talked before about the power of love and likening it to this fire, this inner fire, which we'll come back to in a minute. But this ceremony was also the first time that we saw the Kingdom Choir, who sang Stand By Me, and the conductor and the leader of the choir was a lady called Karen Gibson. Now, very weirdly, a few weeks later after the ceremony, I got invited to, I talked about it a few weeks of the first show. I talked about the first show. She'd set up a gospel choir very near to where I lived, and my friends in the village were part of the choir, and I went along to see their concert, and I was absolutely blown away by this concert. So I'd left the Missing People Choir, and I'd said to myself, look, I love singing and I love expressing myself like that. I need to find another choir. I'd set out the intention to find another choir. And then blow me, the lady who has this amazing Kingdom Choir, I go to their concert and she blows me away, is Karen. She was talking about obviously God and love and the truth and the power of love, and there was elements of being lost and found, and this whole concert spoke to me, and I was up dancing around and singing and clapping. I mean, it was the most joyous thing. It was like, if you could put that on prescription, it should be on prescription, because it was incredible. And like the whole house was jumping with love and power. It was amazing. So I joined the choir, and Karen had actually, by that, she had left. That was her last concert with a choir, and actually that was when I met Laura, who you met in the first episode, who sings our beautiful theme tune, Great White Shark. But anyway, this was Karen's last show, because she, as you know, then went on to get a record deal with Sony, and they're all around the world, the Kingdom Choir, or they were straight after the show, doing the ceremony. So I joined the choir, and then the first season that I did with them, the songs were all about, one of them in particular, which got me, was I Shall Wear a Crown. And it was all about, the lyrics were, when it's all over, I will put on my robe and tell my story, how I made it over as soon as I get home. And the songs that we were singing, they were so pertinent to me. And it was like, after finding Christian, which I thought was going to be, in fact, we both thought that was going to be like the final bit. It's like, oh, we've found each other. We know what's happened. It's all kind of sorted. You know, we'd found some peace. But actually, what happened afterwards was like we talk about it as a second mountain. It was literally like a second mountain that we had to climb to come to, like, tell our story essentially and show everybody what had happened, and to show the power of love and to show that the impossible can happen. And, you know, I'm not going to sort of talk about it now. I will at some point, but that was like, it was like a second mountain to climb. And I needed a huge amount of inner fire and inner love to be able to do that, because so much fear and crap came at me. and I was attracting that because I was scared about being the finder of lost things and actually what that meant and what I was then being asked to do with it, if that makes sense. I knew there was a purpose. You know, we were so sure there was a purpose behind all of this story, and that we then had to work with that and find our way into the public eye somehow. But all of these songs and that gospel singing was what I needed. It literally was what I needed, and it allowed me to again grow back up in strength, grow back in like love for myself, and to know the truth about what I was and what I was able to do and what our purpose was. I'm taking a deep breath here, because this week for me has all been about coming to terms fully with being the finder of lost things. And I know it's the title of this show, but I'd almost like converted it into, it's for you, the audience, to be exploring, you know, finding your lost things. But actually, this is me making a statement, and I've just this week worked out what it was all about. So anyway, this week I have been looking at something called the soul purpose system, which uses we're talking about like the power of the spoken word here. Your name that you were given at birth, so like your full birth name, the sounds in it actually convert into a soul purpose. Now, if you go to my show notes, which they'll be up tomorrow, so Tuesday, at finderoflostthingspodcast.com, I'll have all the information there. But essentially, the sounds of your name are there to show you your physical challenges, your physical goals, your physical talents, but also your spiritual goals, talents and challenges. And you also have, everybody has a soul destiny. So it's like what your soul, what your true self, the inner fire, if you like, within you, you have a purpose here. You were born into this earthly life to fulfill a soul destiny. Okay, you were here to grow, to expand, not to be stuck and fearful, and like I was, you know. We're not here to be stagnant. We're here to be growing. I did the whole system with my name, and my soul destiny came up as a creation code 99, which, if you want to know more about it, you have to have a look at the links, but it's actually from, it's a very powerful soul destiny, and it's actually linked to the dragon or serpent energy. Now, and that serpent energy is, it's essentially channeling the divine, being a real catalyst for change. And just here to change change the world, but change the way that things are done, that are normally done. And if you remember in, I think it was the second episode, when Christian and Duffy came in, and Christian left a gift to me, which was, and I didn't understand it at the time, but it was a necklace, a leather necklace with a dragon. Ursula Decker was saying it looked like a dragon, or it was fire, something to do with dragon and fire. And this is the dragon serpent energy of I was going to say our soul destiny. Now, I did this for Christian and his full names, and his spiritual goal was actually the 99. It was the same as me, but obviously he never made that spiritual goal while he was alive. He did make it. Part of our healing together was actually getting him that 99. That's to that point where he was the wisdom and the bringing new things into the world. But actually his soul destiny was 11-2, which is actually as a rock and as a support and as a he knows the polarity of life and death. He knows, he's kind of got the game that this earthly existence is all about, and his soul destiny was to be the rock and the support to bring that through. So what I'm trying to say is that Christian and I have he's fulfilled his spiritual goals, I have fulfilled my spiritual goals. The only thing we haven't done is actually step into our soul destiny. And that is for me to be the finder of lost things, period. Like, I have to do it now. And Christian's soul destiny is to be the rock, the support, and my sidekick as we go forward and we tell this story to more and more people. And to reach more and more people. And as the finder of lost things, I have to own this. And I'm here to help people who are in the same state that I was in. Element of... Yeah, as I said before, it's like being lost, being stuck, being unsure, being like knowing there's this something bigger for you, knowing there's a purpose here for you, but you just don't know what it is, or you're in such deep grief and you're living a life where you don't think things are possible anymore. And a lot about this coming out as the finder of lost things is like standing up despite everybody saying that's rubbish, that's nonsense, who do you think you are? It's like being brave, and it's purely loving yourself. It's purely loving yourself, loving your true self, owning your true self. It's like not caring what anybody thinks. Obviously, there are going to be some people that, you know, will hate what I'm saying. they're going to really, really react to it. There's another percentage you're going to be whatever, you know, it's your life, on you get. But I'm talking to the people who this really resonates with. And the other thing is that about we're talking about attracting love in and things like that. You can't be attracting love in if you're not attracting, if you're not giving out love. And giving out love, you can only do if you love yourself. I'm always given this. So who I would call the creator, who is God, source, the universe, that's the creator to me. The creator and I, we work together. We created the emergency grief kit, which is freely available from my website. For example, we've created a lot, but that's something that we've that's freely given. So the creator, I've completely lost my track now. So just it's like, oh yes, the tree. The creator always gives me this image of us humans as trees, and we all have like a seed within us. So like in our belly, in our gut, like that seed is our true self. That seed is our fire. Okay. That needs to be ignited. So my role as, I work with lots of people, obviously, and my role as the finder of lost things is to like clear that energy, clear all the fear and the grief, all the negative energy. Then it's to reignite that fire that's in that seed, that self-confidence, that self, a bit self-image, like that positive self-image. And the third part of my work is about pointing that power in the right direction. So that seed, like you put the roots down, which is family, community, nature, it's your support, it's your like what makes you really strong. Okay. And then you start, and your guides, and like being supported and loved. And then your trunk is your self, and that's what gives you the inner strength, and it grows and it grows and it grows, and it almost like dissipates all the negative energy. Like love is such a powerful force that fear just can't fight it. Once you start opening up and you start being like really using that power and that fire and that love, like it takes on a life of its own. It really does, and it starts to attract goodness to you. And then once you've got that strong trunk, then you get the branches and the leaves, and that's all like your direction and your purpose, and you're giving out and receiving. Okay, so there's this real it was just important for me at this point to publicly say I am the finder of lost things, and that will make everything possible. All the purpose, all the things that Christian and I want to do, like, and all the good that we want to bring into the world, and all the fear and grief and heaviness, we want to work against that in a positive way. Yeah, that's all I really have to say. One thing I would like, if we've got regular listens to this podcast, I'd really love it if you could, because we're so new, but if you could make your way to iTunes and leave a review, that would be amazing, because that will help with the expansion of this podcast. But I really do feel like, I know when I sat down, I said I sat down after doing the speech in the church about Christian. It's like that shake. I knew it was releasing stuff. So yeah, I feel relieved to have done that. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you've got something from this. And just remember, the more love you have for yourself, the more you can give out, and then the more you can receive and attract. So, my goodness, I've just forgotten. Christian just has given me this message before when we did our transmediumship sessions, and I'd really just like you to listen to what he says. It was his life lessons, and number 8 was, love is all you need. Love knows no bounds, knows no boundaries, is unconditional, mends broken things, finds lost things, and is the calming balm that's needed in this world at this moment. If everyone could live with a little more understanding and empathy for others, and self-love, and extend that to the animals, nature, and the environment, then there would be more harmony reigning in the world, and it wouldn't be as effed up as it is. Excuse my language. So there you go, a little something from Christian. And also the image that he painted that I couldn't remember earlier on, it's just come to me. It was Bob Marley. And we know how Bob used to sing about love. So there you go. Anyway, lots of love, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to The Finder of Lost Things. I think we've been triggered so long and so hard by COVID, and it's going to carry on. People are getting used to stillness, and they're getting used to more solitude, but how do you use that time for the highest good? This process that we're going to explore will bring back the joy and purpose to life. That wholeness, you know, that sort of harmony and flow and togetherness. People are really ready to find their lost parts now. You can find me at hannahvelton.online.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.